Hello, folks. Welcome to another edition of the World Labor Hour, brought to you in our listener-supported community radio station, WEFT, broadcasting from downtown Champaign, Illinois, and webcasting live worldwide at WFT.org. The views and opinions expressed here, those of speakers, and do not necessarily represent those of the station manager, board of directors, or of Prairie Air Incorporated. Now, here's Gus with some underwriting announcements.
Yes, this hour of programming is brought to you in part by Central Illinois Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Central Illinois Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month at 9:30 a.m. at Channing Murray Foundation, 1209 West Oregon, Urbana. For more information, visit www.centralillinoisjobswithjustice.org. Programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and Decatur attorney Bill Faber, who believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Faber proudly supports the World Labor Hour. The Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois. The Graduate Employee Organization Union, GEO, at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign strives to not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other unions, organizations, and workers engaged in the struggle for social justice, both on and off campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WEFT Community Radio.
Okay, thank you, Gus. And we are in pledge drive, and you know, it's not our favorite part of the year, but unfortunately it is extremely necessary in order to keep this great community asset, this non-corporate radio on the air, because believe me, if this was a corporate radio station, the World Labor Hour and a lot of other public affairs programs like Higher Ground, News from Neptune would not be on the airwaves for you to listen to. So please, whatever you can afford, you can call in at the number, Bill?
359-9338.
Okay.
And maybe we get some lubricant for these microphone things that are squeaking.
Yes, indeed. Okay. Yes, if you could make a pledge, we could actually afford maybe to buy some. So yes. Some WD-40 or whatever. Okay. Gus, you got some interesting things for us this morning?
Yeah, we had there's been a case that's been going on in Atlanta for a little bit now that's kind of somewhat personal, because I actually was a teacher in the Atlanta public school system, but I'm sure everybody heard about the nationwide cheating scandal crisis. This past Wednesday, the case finally ended when four former elementary school teachers, two principals, and five administrators in Atlanta were convicted on state racketeering charges for inflating the results of standardized tests taken by public school students. But here we go with this, though, in which I agree with: the brutal and vindictive treatment meted out to the educators is a watershed in the campaign to vilify teachers and further dismantle public education system in the United States. The Fulton County prosecutor argued that charging educators under the state's RICO Act, which is usually charged to the likes of Al Capone and other notorious nationwide mobsters, is ordinarily reserved for organized crime cases. It was warranted because, this is what the prosecutors argued, it was warranted because the educators personally benefited from changing the answers on the test through bonuses and promotions. And now they face more than 20 years or more in prison.
Unbelievable.
In fact, an investigation by the Georgia governor's office in 2009 found that a culture of fear, intimidation, and retaliation infested the district. So what you have going on here is that these are teachers who were intimidated and threatened to have these erasure parties and getting these students' test scores together for fear that they were going to lose their jobs. They would be, see, in the Atlanta public school system, when you lose a job there, they literally blackball you throughout the entire system. You cannot find work and your certificate is pretty much null and void. So this is a top down regime, and now they're trying to make the educators basically take the brunt for what the administrators and the big people were doing. So again, this is coming from an area where it's a non-union town. So these people are powerless against these nasty forces, and now some of them are going to be spending time in jail for doing something that they were threatened to do. It's inexcusable.
And there's all these, there's a whole testing industry out there that's pushing this. It's all part of their attempts to corporatize the public sector in general, but the public schools in particular, through testing and, charter schools, privatized charter schools, and the whole lot, you know. And also there's like the whole thing about with textbooks now, you know, it's like, there's like a whole, like a corporate, even right wing corporate, bias in the writing of the textbooks, because most of these textbooks are actually written in the state of Texas that are distributed through the whole nation. So yeah, this is another, I mean, what a vicious attack. I mean, horrible.
Oh yeah, Dan, don't forget, all of these tests have to be taken on computers.
Oh, do they? Okay. It's not like we went to school with filling the bubble with a pencil, huh?
Right, you know, we're all, and then, you know, and that's probably one reason that why Bill Gates is really behind this and his foundation.
Yes, along with the Walton family, and And it's a big, I mean, you think about it, I've heard figures that the, you know, if they would privatize the entire U.S. education system, that you're talking in the tens, if not hundreds of billion dollar industry, you know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so, okay, at this point, I would like to welcome, our special guest in the studio. We're gonna be having we got two guests today. One's calling in, from Nebraska, and, our other one is here live in the studio, Decatur attorney, Bill Faber. Bill, welcome back to the World Labor Hour.
Hey, David, thanks a lot. Great to be here with you and Gus and Bill.
Okay, well, so I understand you're running for, city council over in Decatur, so, you wanna talk a little bit about that,
Yeah, well, you know, David, there's 100 other people that would be more qualified than I am, really, and would be great candidates, but no one was stepping up. I've got a political science degree and have been trying cases to juries for 28 years, and I thought, well, maybe I can make my contribution, because after all, that's what the citizen is supposed to do. Democracy requires participation, mm-hmm. and sometimes that requires you being a candidate.
Okay.
So I'm a candidate over there, and I've been proudly endorsed by virtually every labor union over in the Decatur area.
Excellent. Okay. What are some of the big issues over in the city of Decatur?
Well, you know, if you would listen to the to the conversation of my opponents, there are no issues.
Everything's hunky-dory, huh?
Everything's beautiful.
Yeah.
And the Chamber of Commerce has everything well in hand, even though we've been at a 30-year economic decline.
Mm-hmm.
And for our town, the recent labor statistics showed since the last census, we've lost 1,500 people.
Wow.
And within the last few years, we've lost 600 jobs in the professional service area and in construction.
Now, just for the listeners who aren't aware of Decatur, Illinois, it used to be, and I remember this going on with as a kid, a lot of times my parents during the 60s, I mean, back in the 60s through the 70s, even into the 80s, it was a very vibrant community. I mean, Bill, you lived in Bemet, so you went back and forth between Champaign and Decatur, so to speak.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Decatur had a monstrous downtown, and I always appreciated the differences in the architecture. I mean, Decatur was obviously built more in the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
And it has this, I mean, it does look like a city of big shoulders when you're downtown there. And, this town here, I mean, it looks like a, you know, a cow town or something. Two story, looks, you know, Dodge City.
Yeah, but there was all sorts, there's all sorts of industries, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, so many people I knew worked in Decatur and,
Caterpillar, Staley, Firestone, and there was all these other smaller and medium sized factories that kind
Mueller,
of. Part suppliers and
all these people were in the old Allied Industrial Workers Union.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that place is like a nightclub now, their old labor union hall, you know, have bands and stuff all the time. But it was just, I mean, really impressive city.
Yeah. And then of course globalization and, you know, outsourcing to other countries through NAFTA and other corporate trade treaties, really put a whammy on it. And then you had, of course, why this show was originally founded by you and Peter Miller back in the mid 90s was because of the, what they called the war zone back in the early 90s when all Firestone, Caterpillar and AE Staley was on strike, you know.
But I just a few years ago.
Actually, they were locked out. All of them were locked out. They weren't on strike.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's right. Well, no, actually, Firestone and I think and Caterpillar, they were on strike.
Okay.
Staley's was locked out.
Okay.
It was just like I went downtown Decatur a few years ago, and I hadn't been there for a long time. And when I was a kid, there was so many, you know, retail stores and just people everywhere bustling. And now it's like they're all, I guess, out of Forsyth at the mall. And downtown Decatur is just basically restaurants and bars and office buildings and banks. It's really a lot different. Champaign's the same way. You know, just up the street here, you know, on the next block. You know, years ago, the sidewalks would have been full of people shopping and stuff. And now, you know, if it's nice out, they're full of people sitting there at the bars.
Right, yes.
You know, it's kind of the same thing.
Okay, so what are some of the issues you've been kind of hammering your opponent about?
Well, you know, as we were talking about Decatur, I view it as really as a barometer for the country. What you guys have described is just enigmatic of thousand other small communities throughout our country. Well, one thing very controversial that I proposed was a minimum wage increase to $10 an hour for all Decatur workers. Wow. I'm proposing that when I'm elected, that's going to be the first ordinance that I propose, because we did have an advisory referendum in November, a vast majority of Illinois voters voted for that increase. So I figured it was going to take a long time for that to happen, and Governor Rauner wants 7 years time before it happens. So I thought I would use, as a lawyer, I saw an opening here.
He wants two terms. To have it happen in seven years.
So as a lawyer, I saw, you know, Decatur has home rule power. We would just adopt the ordinance and give our workers a raise at $10 an hour. Mm-hmm. And the people really love it, but my friends in the Chamber of Commerce really hate it. it's going to make them all go broke.
Okay. And what are some of the other issues? That's an excellent one, though. I bet it has gotten a lot of attention. Have you gotten coverage on this in the local Decatur media?
Yes, but here's my problem. Since I don't have the backing of the chamber in a municipal election, our turnout is only about 14 to 16%, and those are all typically older voters, conservative voters, and Chamber of Commerce supporters. So those are the people that are go out and going to vote against Bill Faber to make sure he doesn't get in there to propose an ordinance that's going to help the working people. So that's probably the real hot button issue. And the local radio stations are, you know, banging me every day saying,
"Really?
Oh, that's like that new conservative talk." They get a station comes on about 5 years ago, and it's conservative talk, and it's like second rung or third rung conservative talk people. It's just
Have two conservative talk stations.
Indicator.
There's one that is dominant, and the other is less dominant, and a little bit more fair, at least if you're interviewed by those people. But that's the headwinds that the progressive or labor candidate has over in my town. The Chamber of Commerce and the dominant radio station get their candidates elected time and time again.
Well, I remember back years ago when we first had the idea of running Jim Hightower's commentaries. We had to get permission from a station in Decatur because they were running it.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what, if it was WSOI or what. I don't know what it was because I don't really know the market there that well.
Well, we do have a very small, low-power community station that just goes a couple miles at the most in terms of its radius. So it might have been those guys who were running it. I'm not quite sure.
This was several years ago, and it was like at least 10 years ago. But, you know, I really like that there is a low-power station because Decatur, it's got a fairly dense population.
Yeah.
And so that makes sense. I remember several years ago when they were releasing a lot of licenses, it was like they're giving them to places like where I live, and it's like, oh, okay, you know, 20 people can hear it.
Yeah. But probably the other hot button issue is that Governor Rauner has come over to Decatur and targeted our town for his new legislation regarding the decimation of unions, hoping that although Illinois as a state won't pass it, maybe Decatur or Macon County as a local entity might take it, because quite frankly the demographics now in our community are much more conservative and anti-union than supportive of union. So that's one of the reasons that the labor of folks would like me to be the voice to stop that steamroller for Decatur.
And like we was talking before the show, you have a city council election system where it's all the candidates are citywide. There's no defined geographic wards or whatever.
That's right. So one of the things that I was talking to our supporters about is this question about framing. You know, back in the 60s, even way back then, Dr. King said this slogan, right to work, is a false slogan. So I say to our folks, why do we use that term? Because it's conveying the wrong message, and it's falling into the trap of using their language. So when I'm asked the question about that issue, I never use that phrase. I say I'm in support of workplace democracy, and that's one of the great hallmarks of America. We believe in democracy, that every man has a right to his say and to his opinion. And I say, but when you're in the workplace, if you don't have a union and you go talk to that boss and bitch to that boss, you're not going to have a job on Friday. Yeah. Only if you have a union steward to make that complaint to you are you going to still have a job on Friday. I'm in favor of workplace democracy. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, I think it's very important to not only change the narrative, but to be careful about the terminology we use, you know. I just cringe when I watch what few, progressive, television programs are out there. They still use the corporate terminology, like in turn they call it the mainstream media, which I think that's the one that annoys me the most. It's not mainstream, it's corporate. It's corporate media. The other term, reforms, that's another one. You know, when they're talking about basically attacking workers' living standards, they talk about this labor reforms. No, it's an attack. So I really like this, what you're doing.
And
this
is
great.
It's very important that we key on this language and develop our own frames and understand that language is powerful and meaningful. Mm-hmm. We've got to change the debate and own the debate ourselves and think it through.
Yes, yes.
Well, I was just wondering, is there like a sort of a resentment of unions? Do a lot of people in Decatur now think that the unions like drove companies out of town? Or
absolutely. You know, because the only message that the audience gets every day, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for the last 20 years is anti-union. That blame it on the unions. Blame it on the unions. So as a consequence, since there's no alternative message, no alternative education, that's what is in the air, and that's what people truly believe, even working people. Mm-hmm. They stand against the union and the union story.
Now, last time I think you were here, I believe at that time Archer Daniels Midland was trying to extort money from the city of Decatur, and if I remember correctly, they got what they wanted, but they still went ahead and moved their corporate offices anyway.
Yes, well, they're trying to get money from the state of Illinois.
From the state of Illinois,
to stay there, and that didn't quite work out, but they moved anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So they took probably 90 of the best-paying jobs in our community and moved them from our community to the Chicago area, mm-hmm. without any consultation, of course, with our community.
Okay. What about the African-American community in Decatur? I understand that it's about 15-20% of the population.
Mm-hmm.
And are they at all, have you been like interacting with any of the people in the community? And if so, what they have thought about your campaign?
Well, the black community is really revved up and well organized for this particular municipal campaign. They have Dr. Bishop Livingston, who is their mayoral candidate.
Oh, okay.
And they have two other candidates running for the city council seat. Dr. Dana Ray is an incumbent.
Mm-hmm.
She's a physician at the community health clinic, just mm-hmm. a bright, talented young woman.
Mm-hmm.
And then Derek Thaxton, who is an assistant manager at Walmart, a black gentleman, and he's active in the community. And that's their slate.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
I think they're gonna have a much higher voter turnout than they might otherwise have.
Okay. All right.
But, of course, I've been working with the black ministers for years and years, and we run a legal aid clinic over at the Community Church of God,
which is
a black church, and Reverend Elgin Hawthorne Jr. and I have put that together for the last 7 or 8 years. So the black community has been very supportive of my legal career and of my efforts and my politics, but I understand their need to get their folks into power.
Yeah,
I support their effort.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I guess we're going to take a quick music break, and then we're going to be right back. With Bill Faber, and you're listening to the World Labor Hour on Listener Support Community Radio Station WFT in Champaign, Illinois. Stay tuned.
Listen up, we've got a war zone here today, right in our heartland, and across the USA. These multinational bastards don't use tanks and guns, it's true, but they've declared a war on us. Fight back, it's up to you. Oh, it's a war on workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers, and it's time we started calling the shots.
Okay, that was Ann Feeney, War on the Workers, and oh man, it seems like it's the class wars is intensifying more every day. And but anyway, I just want to let you know that we're in pledge drive, and we just can't urge you enough. If you're listening to our program, whatever you can contribute. Of course, if you contribute $90.10, you get some free T-shirts and stuff. But even if you can only afford $10 or $20 would help. I mean, because we need to pay all the utilities, and of course sometimes our transmitter and other equipment breaks down, which is costly. But again, I mean, if we don't have this corporate, this community radio station, there'll be nothing but corporate radio stations in the this town is, and as you heard from Bill over in Decatur, I mean, I'm going to find out about that low powered FM station. These things are critical because, you know, if you've got nothing but corporate radio stations dominating, the airwaves, I mean, they can completely alter your reality beyond your day to day interactions.
I mean, it's not just this station going away. What would happen is this frequency would likely go to some idiot or awful corporation, you know, just like I was saying. You know, a recent station comes on the air in Decatur, an FM station, probably similar range as WEFT. What is it? It's like third-tier crap conservative talk radio. One of the most recent stations come on the air here, Stevie J station. Mm-hmm. More conservative talk
right-wing
and sports.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's what I hate in my car. I get in my car. I go through it, especially at night. And it's just, it's sports, religion, conservative talk, and crappy music.
Yeah.
One sort of another.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. And the thing is about, WFT not only have some great, public affairs, programs, but there's also a great variety of genres of different music that you won't hear on corporate radio. Now, granted, there is Sirius and some of those other satellite stations, but you gotta understand that, you know, with a community radio station, the listener can actually be part of the, programming of the station, and you can be involved and you can do your own radio program, and you don't have that option, satellite, radio and stuff. So,
yeah, you can like call the guy or girl, gal, woman, whatever, whoever's mm-hmm. here, and ask them to play something for you.
Indeed. Okay, real quick, public service announcements. A brand new radio station, our sister station over at Urbana WRFU. It's called Change the Game, radio talk show with host Martell Miller and Chris Evans. That's every Tuesday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on 104.5 FM. And you can call in live at 344-2536, 217, 344-2536. That's Change the Game Radio. Okay, and also, just to let you know that there's various things going on in the community. First of all, Election Day is coming up here Tuesday, but there's early voting. You can find out from various sources where and when for that. There's Champaign School Board candidate election. There's Champaign City Council. Just make sure that you go out and vote. And, I actually went and filmed Champaign School Board candidates at the Electricians Hall last Tuesday night, and it was very interesting. I was hoping to get it on my TV show. Unfortunately, the main technician is gone. I don't think it's going to play this Sunday, but nevertheless, we do have video copy of all these school board candidates, so those that win the election, we'll have them on tape, so to speak, as far as what they said they were going to do. So that's very important. So make sure you tune in also this Sunday and every Sunday from 4 to 5 p.m. for Labor's Worldview TV, and that's at Comcast Channel 6 or on the internet at UrbanaPublicTelevision.org. And anyway, we're back with our in-house guest Bill Faber, and we're expecting a call from a woman named Shelley Heidemann. She's the director of the Faith Coalition for the Common Good in Springfield, which I went to one of their community organizing workshops last Saturday, which was very, very good. She's going to be calling in. Actually, she's visiting her mother in Nebraska here about 11:30. Before she calls in, I wanted to maybe Bill, Gus, what do you think as far as, Bill was saying here about, it seems like, I've seen that problem with trying to get good people to run for public office. That seems to be a real challenge.
Yeah, well, like I said, the thing is that that's kind of a shift historically, because historically the community would always pick their strongest members to run for elected office. That was like the big thing that they would do. So that was a historical trend, especially in the African American community. But as things have shifted, especially in towards the political economy in neoliberal global capitalism, you see that there's been a lot of fracturing of communities, so that there's very few to have that strong contingent of what some people would call a vanguard, or somebody that they would pick to be a leader to run for a position. So it's very difficult to find these people to do these types of things anymore. And to be quite frank, a lot of people feel very disillusioned by the political party system, and they believe that the Democrats who were supposed to be representing them always just use them for votes and then turn their backs on them when they're actually in office. So a lot of people just like, what's the point at this situation? They don't mind voting, but to actually represent a party in this two-party system is very, you know, it's degenerative at this point because everything continues to deteriorate. So,
yeah, indeed, very well said. And Bill, your thoughts on this?
Well, you know.
Mr. Favor.
Thank you. I just wanted to respond to Gus's comments because what I would like to see is the labor unions develop their own candidates. For example, over in my town, okay, I'm going to be the voice for the labor guys, but where's their guy?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why wait for a lawyer? Why not get a carpenter or an electrician to step up and be their guy and groom them, get them ready? You might need to have a minor league for a while, but get him or her ready so that they can step in and think 10 years ahead.
A 10-year plan.
And Oregon, because believe we ain't going to get this done without labor. We need a good, strong, progressive movement, but we need labor. Without labor, nothing happens.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's so key to everything is that we have to get labor involved and we have to have labor and the community both together in some type of strategic fashion. I like what you said in that thinking ahead and planning for 10 years. We can't just think about these elections on April 7th. There are things that we should already be gearing up for in terms of the next elections, you know. So that's a very good point. Yeah.
Okay, here's our caller. So. Hello, WFT, you're on the air.
Good morning. This is Shelley Heidemann. I'm the director of Faith Coalition for the Common Good.
Okay, Shelley, well, listen, welcome to the World Labor Hour. And today you're out actually visiting your mother in Nebraska?
I am. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, for the listeners who aren't aware, Shelley is from Springfield, Illinois, and I actually, myself and the community organizer for the Graduate Employees Union, Gus Antoline, actually drove over and to the community organizing workshop that the Faith-Based Coalition for the Common Good had in Springfield at the Union Baptist Church last Saturday, and I wanted to say that it was a really excellent workshop, some great speakers, that's why I was really motivated to have you call in and everything. So why don't you just let the listeners know a little bit about what the Faith Coalition for the Common Good is and what they do.
Okay, very good. Well, first of all, thank you so much for inviting me to be on today. I really appreciate it. And I'm glad that you had a really positive experience at our training last week. The Faith Coalition for the Common Good is an organization of 28 member institutions that are faith congregations, nonprofit, community, and labor union organizations. The purpose of our organization is to build power. And in our definition of power, it's the ability to act. And we train the leaders within our organization to be able to have a voice in the public arena and to really address the issues that are most affecting them and their community.
Okay.
And these kind of issues are issues of racism, poverty, discrimination, and other justice issues.
Okay. And so what are some of the issues you've been working on the last couple of years over in Springfield?
Okay. In Springfield, we've been working a lot on the rail project. It's actually part of the Illinois High-Speed Rail Project that's coming down from Chicago to St. Louis.
Uh-huh.
And it's going to be coming right through Springfield. We developed a rail community benefits agreement that says that the people that are going to be impacted most by that rail project, which are mainly folks that live on the east side of Springfield, the low-income, more minority population of Springfield, that they should benefit from this project through jobs, job training opportunities, economic development, rail relocation assistance, safety and noise abatement, and then to be actually have a voice in the decision-making process.
Okay.
That community benefits agreement was signed by the city, the county, IDOT. Senator Durbin gave support. Many of our legislators supported it. And so now we're at the point where we're really holding the decision makers' feet to the fire to make sure that what they committed to, they're actually going to be upholding.
How many jobs approximately is this light rail project going to bring to Springfield over the course of the time it's being built to the city?
That's a good question.
Uh-huh.
Right now, the funding is kind of sketchy, and they've been getting funding just for in an incremental basis. So right now, they're just working on one underpass.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I think it's a $31 million project, it's a lot of money.
Yeah, sure.
What we're really trying to push for is more minorities and women to be able to be employed by that project.
Mm-hmm.
And I seem to remember that when Governor Quinn and Senator Durbin first announced the project, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, and this was for the whole statewide project, they were talking like 1,000 jobs or something like that, or, you know, so, I mean, the potential is there, and anytime there's infrastructure improvements made, there's opportunity for jobs, and we feel that the people in the community should be the ones benefiting from those jobs.
Okay.
Yeah. This is Gus Wood, the co-president of the GEO. I'm sure you met Grant Antoline when,
I did.
Yeah. And he came back very excited about the, conference and things going forward.
Good.
So in terms of what's going on now with Bruce Rauner, what are your feelings in terms of how he will impact these plans and the types of coalitions and organizations that you have going on moving forward?
Mm-hmm.
It seems that he's really on a furious onslaught, at this point. So in terms of kind of the next few years, like where do you see your organization colliding with him, and how do you see yourself fighting the types of things that he wants to do?
Well, I think this is a really critical time for people in the community, people of faith, community organizations, and labor union to join forces to build a collective power, to really be able to influence those decisions that the governor and our state legislature are trying to make. We want what's best for the people in our community. We want people to have equal opportunities. We want there to be jobs. We want people to be able to have a way to support their families. And we're really concerned about a lot of the cuts that the governor is proposing, mainly that are going to hurt working families, going to hurt the poor.
Yeah, all of his cuts are aimed at hurting people. You know, that's what's very interesting. He doesn't have one progressive statute out, or all of his legislation is regressive. So yeah, very interesting that a person that's only been in office for a few months only has regressive policies, and it's starting to bite him in the behind as well. So
yeah, in particular, I mean, he's wanting to cut back on, you know, like the, game and wildlife, and parks and stuff. So this is really going to hurt him with some of the traditional Republican voters who are hunters, fishermen, and everything else. I can't wait, frankly, on that. But back to you, Shelley. Now, when I was over there, one thing I thought was really interesting was that you first of all, you have a bunch of different committees that people kind of break and work on. One of them is called City Services, in addition to the Light Rail Committee. Could you explain a little bit to the listeners what the City Services Committee, what they're trying to do at this point in time?
Sure. We call them task forces.
Okay.
So we have City Task Force, Education, the Rail Task Force, Immigration, and then also Civic Engagement.
Okay.
And so the City Task Force has been working on pushing the city to actually enforce the Affirmative Action Plan that they established a couple of years ago to increase, again, the minorities and females that are employed by the city. We've also worked with them on an ordinance which said that it would increase minority participation on contracts that were let, so that more minority business owners would be able to have an opportunity to bid on and get and also receive contracts on city projects. We have a mayoral election on Tuesday, an aldermanic election, and so we will be pushing the new administration to institute a residency requirement that says that those people that work for the city should live in the city.
Nice.
And that, of course, will be for new hires. The folks that already are working for the city would probably be grandfathered in. So those are the types of things that we're working on as far as city, as well as trying to make sure that the east side of Springfield, which, again, is the most low-income side of town, receives adequate infrastructure improvements in their city streets, sewers, and those types of things.
Okay. Now, what I also found interesting was that there was a fair number of people that were there, a contingent, if you will, of West African people from the city or small city of Beardstown, Illinois, which is not a very large community. And it was kind of really surprising to me that there was actually, it seems like there's a fairly significant West African community in that little town on the Illinois River, with a major employer being Cargill. Could you let the listeners know kind of how that dynamic first of all happened and kind of what's going on with them over there?
Sure. There's actually about 1,000 West African immigrants that have moved to Beardstown, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, you know, Beardstown was an all rural community, and I think in the early 1990s, many Latinos moved into the Beardstown area to work at Cargill, which is the pork processing plant.
Mm-hmm.
they slaughter, I think, 20,000 hogs a day at that, at that facility. And in the last 10 years, because of opportunities that our government provided to the West African countries, the, through a visa lottery program.
An HB2, it'd be an HB2 visa, probably?
Yes, I believe so.
Mm-hmm.
And many of these West African folks have been able to come here legally through this process of this visa lottery process. And so many of them are well-educated in their home countries. They have college degrees. But when they come to the United States, our education system doesn't recognize their degrees. And so the only jobs that they can get when they first get here are these jobs at the Cargill Pork Processing Plant. And they spend so much of their time, first of all, learning English and then going to school at either Western Illinois University or the University of Illinois in Springfield or Lincoln Land to try and get their college degrees up to par so that they can actually do the work that they were doing in their home country.
Okay.
Or to have the kind of career they had hoped that they would be able to have here in the United States.
Yeah. Hi, my name's Bill, and we have a similar thing going on here at a truck bumper factory in Urbana, where those people from the Democratic Republic
of Congo.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how many people. I guess there's becoming a sort of a sizable community of these.
Yeah,
folks.
I think there's about 500 in Champaign, Urbana. Yeah,
yeah, it sounds like the same situation. You know, sort of a bait and switch on the job. And another thing too, I was wondering about those plants. Were they union at one time? One of the reasons I'm asking about this. That is because I've worked on construction jobs with at least a couple of people, and these would be, they were white American native born males, who were former workers at, I guess at Cargill plant.
Mm-hmm.
I was just wondering if there'd been like some, decertification of a union or, some other just like lowering of, wages and conditions or something to drive, that cause these people to, move on to construction.
I think what my understanding is that originally that plant was owned, I think, by Hormel.
Mm-hmm.
And the wages were very high, and all of the local residents at that time worked there. And then there, I'm not sure if it was because the plant was sold or I'm not sure what happened, but it could be that when it was sold to Cargill, then the wages went way low. There is a UFCW union at that plant.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the starting wages are around, I think, $12 to $14 an hour.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They do have a union there now, but I think the folks that worked at the Hormel plant originally, like, they were like meat cutters, you know, and they were being paid at a very good wage. Well, that was all cut, and a lot of people left then, and then that's when Latinos came into the job market.
Well, I think there may also be some technological changes going on. And as a matter of fact, one of the things that I read about livestock is that they're now being bred with processing in mind. So they're easier to cut up.
Interesting.
I mean, you know, there's all those factory farms where the hogs never see the light of day
until
they are hauled to market. And I mean, I just can't quite fathom 20,000 hogs a day being slaughtered.
That is an incredible number indeed. You know, a couple things, we're just about out of time here, but I wanted to comment. One thing I thought was really interesting is one of your main speakers who was, I guess, from the national, you're affiliated with a national organization, is that correct?
Yes. We're part of a statewide organization called Gamaliel of Illinois.
Okay.
There's organizations like ours in East St. Louis, Chicago, and the Quad Cities.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're part of a national organization called Gamaliel.
Okay.
And there are, I think we're in 17 different states, and there's like 70 organizations like the Faith Coalition for the Common Good across the U.S.
Okay. Well, that
Faith Coalition works on local issues.
Mm-hmm.
We work on statewide issues with our statewide partners, and then we work on national issues.
Mm-hmm.
And the national issue that we're working on right now is to increase the federal minority and female hiring regulations that have not been updated since 1979. And so in Springfield, the minority hiring goal is only 4.5% on any federally funded project.
And what's the
at least be triple.
Yeah, I was going to say, what's the approximate African American population of Springfield?
About 25%.
Well, why shouldn't it be 25% then? I mean,
well, there's some kind of mathematical way that they look at the
okay, those mathematicians again, boy.
Yeah. From the economists.
Yes, indeed. So, you know, Shelley, it was really interesting. You had that one of the main speakers you had at this event last Saturday from the national organization, Angela James. She was an incredible speaker, and boy, what a—I mean, you could just tell this woman went through the school hard knocks when she was growing up. And, you know, probably as a young, you know, woman and stuff. And, boy, she was just excellent. And what I think I thought was interesting was she was kind of doing, starting off doing the introduction. She did, sort of an analysis of where we're at. And I really thought it was interesting the terminology she used. She said, she compared basically to, what we have now in the United States as, and of course, this is a faith-based, organization, listeners. So this is how she phrased it. She said, we've got basically a conflict between Pharaoh's empire and God's commonwealth, or she says, if you'd rather, the people's commonwealth. And I thought that sort of analogy of Pharaoh's empire and the people's commonwealth was a really interesting way and a great way, frankly, in my opinion, to sort of frame the whole, you know, the narrative and the kind of discussion.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And as you look through the history of the United States, it's been white males and people with money that have been in power ever since the beginning that have created all of our laws and policies. And so what we're saying, I mean, through the Faith Coalition and through the Gamelia Network, is that there should be, our society should be where everyone has an equal opportunity for jobs and for a living that is, you know, more equal across the board.
Okay.
And that there should be opportunity for all.
Okay.
You know, and that there should be the common good for everybody.
Yes, the common good, yes, for the commonwealth, the people's commonwealth, yes.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
So anyway, if people wanted to find out more, do you have a website or a Facebook page that they could go to?
We do. Our website is www.faithcoalition-il.org. Faith Coalition is all one word. So faithcoalition-il.org. And we also have a Facebook page, you know, Faith Coalition for the Common Good. I think if you just put that on Facebook, it'll pop up. And I just want to also say that really our main focus is to train just the normal people in those churches, nonprofits, and union labor organizations to be able to have a voice in the public arena and to really impact the decisions that are affecting our communities, but most importantly, that are affecting our own personal lives. And it's just a wonderful organization. It's a way to really become involved. And oftentimes people don't think that their voice matters. But when we come together, we're trained, we talk to decision makers, we can have an impact on what's happening in our lives.
That was a great ending, Shelley. And thank you so much for taking time out of your Easter weekend to call in and let people know about your organization. And, you know, there's been some rumor I've heard that there's might be some of your organization might be actually trying to form some chapters in other cities here in central Illinois. So I look forward to seeing that happen.
We'd be very interested. We just need people to contact us, and we're welcome to come and talk about it.
Okay, great. Thank you again.
Thank you. Take care.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, that was Patti Smith, People Have the Power. And anyway, I just had to play that song after Shelley called in and everything because, you know, we all of us, we need to start talking to our neighbors. We need to start connecting with other people in other communities and start communicating and, you know, coordinate, organizing basically to fight back against this, you know, these horrible conditions that's have been perpetrated on us for the last, frankly, it's been a 30-year decline, you know, and we got to start fighting back, folks, or it's just going to keep getting worse and worse for us, for our kids and, you know, our grandkids. I mean, if these people are in power, and this is an international problem, and, you know, the thing is, if these people have their way, they will push standard our standard of living down so low that we'll be fighting for just, you know, scraps, I mean, for over $3 an hour jobs. But anyway, I want to let you know about another event coming up here in a couple weeks, and is anyway, it's sponsored by Jobs with Justice, and anyway, it's let's see here, yeah, it's basically a public forum called Bad for Workers, Bad for Illinois, Rounders Wrong and What We Can Do About It. That's going to be at the Champaign Public Library on Saturday, April 25th at 1 p.m. And there'll be a lot of good speakers, including our very own Gus Wood here. He's going to be on the panel. And just to also let you know that coming up here is going to be another rally for Fight for 15, $15 an hour minimum wage. And I'm looking here. It's going to be at the McDonald's on the corner of Kirby and Neal. And I don't see a date on here. Do you happen to know when that? Oh, I see it here. Okay, Wednesday, April 15th.
Yeah, it's the same place we had it in the winter time. So mm-hmm. It's the same McDonald's, and you know, we had an amazing turnout for that, and it was in the snow and it was cold, but we still had a lot of people show up for it. So this time we're expecting even bigger numbers because of the weather change. So I'm excited for this one.
Yeah, I turned out for that one too, and yeah, it was kind of miserable out, but boy, I'll tell you what, with all those people there, you didn't notice the cold out, cold and rain, like freezing rain almost. It really was inspiring, and it took your mind off the conditions. So you're going to have a lot nicer weather this time, though. And here's an interesting thing. The time has clearly come for improvements in these retail sectors. It's like, I guess, over 50% of the new jobs created since the recession of 2007-2008 have been low-wage jobs, and over 25% of these workers have children, most on public assistance. And in the Champaign-Urbana area, frontline fast food workers number almost 1,800, and they only average about $8.76 an hour. And it's even lower for people that work as maids, housekeepers, and child care workers. So, you know, $15 an hour is what needed. You know, $10 an hour, it's just not enough. I mean, $15 an hour is what's needed. And frankly, if you live in a city like New York, San Francisco, mm-hmm. Boston, it probably should be more like $20 an hour, you know. Mm-hmm. And if, frankly, if the minimum wage had kept up with productivity since the late 60s, the minimum wage now would be about $22 an hour, I believe. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we want to come back now to Decatur attorney Bill Faber here about talking about his run for city council of Decatur. So, Bill, what are some of the other issues that you've been talking about?
Sure. David, you know, if I could just pick up on your minimum wage comment. Of course, the ordinance I have proposed in Decatur was for a $10 an hour minimum wage. And the reason we didn't go with 14 or 15 is that we felt there was no way, there was a politically viable way we could get that ordinance passed at that level. So we thought $10 was better than where they are now. So we made a strategic decision to go with the $10 instead of the higher number. It's the other issue that in our community, David, we have proposed is that we develop a people's bank.
Oh, yes, bank, yes.
So that nice. we could yes. finance entrepreneurs, startups, especially women who can, you know, have access to $500, $1,000, $1,500 to get going. You know, David, I run my own law firm, and so I'm a small businessman, and I know how when you're struggling to start your own business in those first couple years, if you get a loan or some good financial advice at the right time in the right place, it can make the difference between a business succeeding or failing. And we want to offer that type of support to the men and women in our community to start their own businesses. Because why work for the boss? Why don't you have a dream and work for yourself? And that's what we were trying to promote.
Oh yeah, that sounds great. And because, you know, so many people out there that are self-employed, aren't self-employed because they want to be. It's because they have no other choice. I mean, sure. They have to be. And there are advantages to being self-employed. I mean, there's disadvantages too. And, you know, it is a challenge. I mean, to be, self-employed you know, but it's better than, you know, basically, not having anything going on and stuff. So I think that's very good.
Sure.
You know, initiative and stuff. Yeah. And, you know, the thing is when we say $15, you know, is what we need. This is what we need to strive for. This is what we need to push for. This is what we are trying to force state governments and large corporations to do. You know, a smaller community like Decatur, if, you know, and also, you know, I'm not the one who's going to, is an all or nothing kind of thing. If we could, you know, you demand 15, if you can settle for 10, 11, whatever for now, then take it and move on, you know?
Sure. The scary thing about that is that you push so hard for that 15, and when it finally does come, it comes so much later that yes. by that yes. point, the cost of living has gone up. Mm-hmm. And now you're looking at 15, basically feeling like 5 and 6 again. So you have to push for another one. So
sure.
like you're always trying to catch up to that race to get to where cost of living is,
sure.
you know? So that's, it's a struggle and when you're organizing for that type of, in this particular system.
Sure.
You know?
Because the fundamental purpose of a corporation and a business is profit.
Exactly.
And they want to increase it as much as they can. Mm-hmm. So along those lines, one other proposal I had made is that our there would be a department within our city government about helping people understand what cooperatives are.
Oh, wow.
As an,
okay.
as an alternative business form. Because mm-hmm. when you're in a cooperative, you're one of the owners and you make the decision. And I tell the people, for example, a co-op is like a credit union.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really nice type of co-op. And I also say, like, if our Firestone plant in Decatur was run by a cooperative, run by the workers, there is no way that the workers would have voted to close down that plant. Because
that's
they
for
would
sure.
have been in charge.
Yes.
And so, and many people don't have any idea that a cooperative is an alternative business form. And so we want to explore that and educate our people in Decatur that is a legitimate alternative and a powerful way for workers to secure their future.
Yeah, and it's not pie in the sky because there are, I don't know how many, there's actually tens of thousands of cooperatives across the United States. And I think Cleveland, Ohio, has some really large, successful ones, including, one called Evergreen Laundry Service.
Yes.
That does all the laundry work for all the medical centers and everything and the University Medical Center as well as the other
sure.
medical centers there in, the, inner city of Cleveland.
Yeah.
And we're getting ready, as you know, we're getting ready to open our next, you know, the co-op is moving towards the North End area of Champaign. They're opening that new food co-op. We're trying to gear up a lot of support around that for the African American community to really be a part of that moment, because that's a very big time for that. And I was talking to my great co-president Rebecca Pulsifer about that. Like, this is something that we really want to rally around, because like you said, this is a great chance for the workers not only to be a part of that, but also kind of change the way we look at the food and eating
yes.
and things like that in the community. I mean, this is a major step towards some progressive change
sure.
in Champaign
yeah.
with the building of this new food co-op. So yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know,
well, that's really some good forward look. I mean, wow. I mean, when are you going to run for U.S. Congress? I mean, this is just, I mean, you've got, this is great how you've taken some wonderful needed ideas and have basically synthesized them down to where they are, you know, applicable and needed in the local community.
David, we got to do something different over
yes.
in our town, because 30 years of conventional wisdom has taken us into this economic decline. And I say that what our city council and leaders are doing, they're conducting a very nice and respectful funeral service.
Oh.
And they're acting as pallbearers.
Yeah.
And I want to go around, resurrect the body politic. And we're only going to do that with new innovative ideas and with radio programs like yours to spread the word.
Okay. Very good. Now, we've got a little bit more time here, and of course, you know, when you happen to think of some other things before we go, we're going to preempt the Union Edge a little bit here. We don't get Bill over here very often, and it's always a pleasure when he does come. I wanted to talk a little about some, you know, you send out a flyer to a lot of people you know on a regular basis about certain issues, you know, in the state of Illinois. And one of those I just got recently in the mail was about, mandatory overtime for nurses. Could you talk a little about that?
Yes. Well, the nurses, the National Nurses Union has brought this forward as an issue that many of the hospitals are requiring nurses to work mandatory overtime, 12-hour shifts, double shifts, and with the nurses are trying to gain control over their schedule, because unbelievably, the nurses have no input in most of the hospitals to what the schedules would be. And what the nurses are finding is that this is endangering and hurting the nurses, more injuries, and it is causing nurses to not have the attention to detail or the concentration that they need to properly care for the patient. So there's an additional risk to the patient. And so the nurses are endangered, the patients are endangered, and that's what we sent out a newsletter to many of our friends from my law firm, telling them of this issue, just so that they would help support the nurses, you know, find a way to have input into their schedules.
Well, and even without the mandatory overtime, I think it's been a trend for at least 20 years for hospitals to have three 12-hour shifts that are rotating. mm-hmm. you know, weekly too, and you put overtime on top of that.
Yep.
Wow. That is just, you know, terrible. I remember when they were doing those, they were, that, well, that was an issue, I believe, with Bridgestone Firestone in the 90s. They wanted to do that.
Well, that was also why they were the lockout happened at Staley.
Well,
it wasn't
okay, maybe I'm confusing that with Staley, but I know mm-hmm. that was – yeah, that was right. That was an issue.
It wasn't the money. It was the fact of forced, you know, rotating 12-hour shifts.
You know, and so many nurses understand that they need a union to speak for them, but they're scared to death to try to organize because they're going to lose their job because mm-hmm. the boss will take vengeance on their effort.
I don't see any unions really jumping in, not around here anyway. And in this, tackle care is what probably at least the second biggest industry.
10 years ago, Bill, I did a little research on this, and there was, I think it was 9,000 healthcare workers. And that's not even including the doctors who are now fewer and fewer. There's few doctors that are private practitioners. I mean, they're employees, mm-hmm. you know, of clinics and hospitals. You know, they're part of the working class,
you
know.
Doctors group, you know. When I remember when I was a kid, we'd just go up to town. You know, and this doctor had a storefront, and you had a receptionist, and you went in, you waited, and then you went and you saw him, and now they have these things, and it's like you see like six people or something. And it's really weird now.
Yeah, you get six bills usually. But, you know, that's the thing is that, things have not changed for the better. And I think this is, you know, really important. You know, as far as that's concerned, Bill, I've tried, three different unions to come down here and organize, and they from Chicago. I tried to get the SEIU to come down. I tried to get the United Electrical Workers to come down, and I tried to get the National Nurses Union, and nobody wants to come down and organize. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know why. You know,
the National Nurses Union didn't even.
Nope, they said they got their hands full in Chicago. They still that they've only got like about 30% of the hospitals organized, which you know, it's like they lost a big. They had a big campaign going, then when I called them, they just lost it and by a few votes. And it's something else. And I think you know you're right, Bill. That's ultimately what needs to happen is more unionization. I mean, but in the meantime, you know, what are these nurses supposed to do? I mean, that's why it's good. I think it's wonderful that you're publicizing this. And then maybe we can get something. Where you do you think something? A more quick fix would be some kind of legislation or?
You know, I just think public awareness. This mm-hmm. should be headline news.
Yes.
You know, your health and your grandma's health and your mom and dad and your kid's health is in danger because the boss is making these nice nurses work too much and put you at risk. They, you know, that needs to be pushed.
Yeah.
And don't forget the 24-hour news channels. They have so much time to fill, so they have to talk about, you know, Kardashians and things.
Well, Bill, that's the whole thing. See, you know, it's, you know, and like you said about democracy, in a real democracy, you need an informed citizenry. And the corporate media does not inform the citizenry. It's like you said, Bill, it's like they spin stories, they ignore stories, you know, they distract with all sorts of useless garbage like the size of Kim Kardashian's rear end, from the previous year. You know what I'm talking about, you know, and, this is all intentional. I mean, this is not, you know, something that just happens or what the people want. I've heard people say that before. No, it's not what the people want, it's what the advertisers want. You know, that's what drives what programming is on corporate TV. And that's why it's so important, folks, to support local community and alternative radio and other media sources. And please, you know, I haven't gotten a call yet here, so please, if you're listening, call in. Any amount is helpful, and we can work it out with the monthly payments. So if you want to call in to help keep non-corporate community radio on the air, you can call 217-359-9338. So anyway, Bill, you've talked about a lot of the issues and everything in Decatur and stuff. And, let me ask you, what was kind of your motivation for running? I mean, cause you know, this takes a lot of time, you know, and energy.
Yeah. Well, like you said about democracy, it's a very precious, precious thing and it can go away in a flash. And, we have this precious democracy that, you know, my grandparents and my father, you know, fought and put their lives at risk and shed blood for this freedom to vote. Mm-hmm. They have a democracy, and you know, I've got the experience, I have the ability, so I thought I would step up because democracy requires an informed citizen and an active citizen. Mm-hmm. So I thought I'm going to just step up and pretend this is just like a civil service job, and that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah. And so, okay, so any last words for our listeners today?
Well, you know, democracy demands debate. And it demands information, and it demands community radio, and it demands community newspaper, and it demands the citizens to be involved in the decision-making process.
Well, I couldn't say it better, Bill, and thank you so much for coming in. We're always happy to have you, because every time you come, it's like, wow, it's like, it's just a, we don't know always what you're going to talk about. I mean, we kind of maybe have a general idea, but it's always a pleasure having you, because it's always informative and very stimulating.
Great. You're important to the community, David.
Okay, well, thank you very much. You've been listening to the World Labor Hour, listener-supported community radio station, WFT in Champaign. Stay tuned for the Union Edge, hosted by Charles Showalter out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And until next week, be safe and power to the people. Take care.